David Grimm, editor of Science's online daily news site, Science Now, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news. First up, a billion-year hard drive. What would make it last a billion years, Dave?
Well, Rob, it all has to do with nanotechnology. Researchers took these single iron crystals and they put them into these hollow carbon nanotubes. And nanotubes, just like diamonds, nanotubes are among the most stable structures in existence. So we're talking about something that's very permanent, very durable here, and hence the term billion-year hard drive. And how it would work is like this. You know, Rob, that computers read binary, and that means computers read a series of ones and zeros. And how that translates into this setup is these little iron crystals can move from one end of the nanotube to the other. So if they're at one end, it's, say, a one, and if they're at the other end, it's a zero. And the researchers can use an electrical force to make this happen. And actually, you can see a video of these little iron crystals moving back and forth within the nanotubes on the site.
Are we just talking about a prototype here, or is there a likelihood that this will ever make it to market?
Well, you know, this seems like a really complicated process. And, you know, the question is, well, why go through all this trouble in the first place? And it turns out there really may be a market for this stuff because our current storage technology is actually not very good. In fact, as we become more technologically advanced as a civilization, our ability to store information has gotten a lot worse, which is kind of ironic.
How so?
Well, take this example. In the year 1085, William the Conqueror compiled what's called the Domesday Book, which was a record of English settlements in the period. That book, 1,000 years later, is still around. But a DVD that you burned 5 years ago may not work anymore. DVDs are put together with glue and other materials that can actually come apart over time. It's something called DVD rot. And even when we're talking about hard drives or other types of storage, these other technologies rely on things like magnets, which can degrade over time. And so we really have this problem right now with data storage. We think we've got this great digital technology, but in fact, we've got a real problem with preserving a lot of the digital content we're creating right now. So a new technology like this, where you're not relying on magnetic media, where you're not relying on glue and other fragile materials, could potentially last for, the researchers say, millions, if not a billion years.
But it'll still be at least a few years before we're picking this up at the local electronics store?
Yeah, this is still a long way from commercial development.
Okay, so what other stories have you brought with you today?
Well, Rob, how about a story about poop?
Sure, tell me more.
Well, Rob, this story is all about tracking penguins in the Antarctic.
By their poop?
Exactly. And in this case, we're actually talking about emperor penguins, which are really tall. They can grow to 1.2 meters tall. And you would think they're really not that hard to spot when you've got all this white ice that they live on. But it turns out they're actually really hard to find. First of all, the white and the black of these penguins blends in with the white of the ice and the black shadows on the ice. So it makes them really hard to spot from aerial photos or even from space when we're talking about satellite photography. And also, these penguins tend to really be out there and breeding in the very dark and cold months of the Antarctic winter. And researchers aren't around then. It's just too cold to be outside. So a lot of the evidence we have for how many emperor penguin colonies are in the Antarctic and just how many individuals there are is really sort of anecdotal. I mean, people on tour groups will see these penguins and scientists will sometimes run across them accidentally. But there really hasn't been any great way to quantify how many penguins and how many colonies are there.
So they're flying over Antarctica and taking pictures and looking for poop?
Well, that's what these researchers hit upon. They said, well, we can't deal with black and white, but how about reddish-brown stains, as in the reddish-brown guano of penguin poop? You would think that that would stand out a lot better on the Antarctic ice than the penguins would. But it's not that they're flying over the ice and looking for these poop stains, as it were. They're actually using satellite photography. And in this study, the researchers looked at a compilation of hundreds of photos of various regions of Antarctica.
Images taken by the satellite to look for poop stains?
Well, that wasn't the original purpose of these images. They're actually part of a project called the Landsat Image Mosaic of Antarctica that was done for other scientific reasons. But what these researchers found is when they peruse these photos and actually develop some software that would help pick up these reddish-brown stains, they were able to isolate particular penguin colonies just by finding their poop on the ice. And the study didn't end there. The researchers actually got some really interesting information out of this new methodology. First of all, they discovered 10 new colonies of emperor penguins that nobody knew about before. And they also discovered that 6 colonies that people did know about seemed to have disappeared. And it turns out these colonies were in places far north in Antarctica. And the researchers think that climate change may have actually caused them to disappear.
Or perhaps move to a different spot, and so might be one of these 10 previously unknown colonies.
I suppose that's possible.
Okay, last story. What's this one about?
Well, Rob, how about one more animal story? This one is about monkeys, specifically tufted capuchin monkeys that live in South America. And these are really small monkeys. They live in groups of about 7 to 40 individuals, and they have this very hierarchical society where members that have very high status tend to bully members with lower status and take their food and, you know, have other bullying behaviors. And it turns out that these lower status monkeys may have found a way to even the score.
Now you've got a sound file with you, I see. Is that a capuchin monkey evening the score somehow?
This is how they even the score. And listen to this file.
What was that?
Well, believe it or not, that is a capuchin monkey warning call. This is the sound they make when there's a predator nearby, say a snake or a predator cat like an ocelot. And typically the monkeys use these calls to let everybody know, hey, there's a predator nearby, let's all get out of here. But what one researcher observed was that sometimes monkeys, especially these lower class monkeys, would make these calls when there were no predators around at all, but when all the other monkeys were feeding. And what happened, what he noticed was that when these lower class monkeys would make this call, a lot of the other monkeys, especially the higher class monkeys, would scram because they thought a predator was nearby. And all of a sudden, there was all this food that they were eating left behind. And he said, I wonder if these lower class monkeys are faking these alarm calls. And it turns out it looks like they do. He conducted a series of experiments, and he found that when these lower class monkeys make the alarm call, the higher class monkeys would leave. And when they did so, the lower class monkeys would swoop in and steal, you know, say their banana or whatever else they were eating.
How often did that work? I mean, this seems to sound as if there's some deception going on, or is there some other reason why they would be making the calls?
Well, that's really one of the central questions posed by this study, because if it turns out that the monkeys are actually doing this on purpose, if they're being deceptive, if they're crying wolf, as it were, it indicates a very advanced cognitive ability. It indicates that the monkeys have evolved the ability to predict how others in their group will respond to certain stimuli. And it feeds into this larger concept called Machiavellian intelligence. And the idea here is that societies have evolved this ability where individuals have learned to be deceptive to better compete. And in this case, the monkeys are trying to compete by evening the score. But it's still an open question about whether the monkeys are actually doing this on purpose. And it's important to note here that these fake calls only worked about 40% of the time. And one expert points out that perhaps the monkeys are just making the calls because they get nervous around higher ranking monkeys and they're just stressed out and they're making these calls. And the effect of these higher ranking monkeys running away and the other monkeys getting the banana is just a nice side bonus, but that the monkeys actually aren't doing it to be deceptive. And that's really an open question at this point. And again, is really going to be important for deciding how smart these monkeys really are.
Oops, I didn't mean for you to run away, Dave.
I'm still here, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now or on the policy blog, Science Insider?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we're looking into a story about the evolution of laughter. So that should be a really fun one. And on the Science Policy blog, we continue to follow swine flu. We've got almost daily updates on what's going on with the latest with this pandemic. And also a new report out about how women are faring in academia. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news, plus find a link to the Science Policy blog, Science Insider, at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.